Hello, everyone, and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Wesley Salmon. What's up, y'all?
It's very in keeping with the 2019 beard you have
now.
Yeah. Because you haven't been on
the
show since...
I believe in safety. Safety first.
Okay, well, you're joining other such fine beard luminaries as Ted Cruz and Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
Sporting the winter beard.
So, oh, I just realized you said Ted Cruz. I was thinking Tom Cruise. Ted Cruz.
Oh,
I take
so
back
close.
My thank you.
So close. Just a couple of letters different. All right, well, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys. Good to be back on End Credits.
Yes, good. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the sci-fi slasher sequel, Happy Death Day to You. And that is in the second half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about the Oscars. I don't know why that...
Next weekend.
It seems like a fitting just to have sort of like a some kind of sound effect, some kind of warning sound effect, because it just has not been going well.
No. Well, they tweeted like yesterday they're still forming, they're still switching it up. They're still going to change some things.
Yes, I think they'll be...
they're improv-ing this year. And
it is a bit of free jazz this year.
It makes it more special in a strange way than the last, you know, like, I don't know, 10.
Well, you say special.
I didn't say it a good
I
way.
Say,
it makes it more interesting.
I say Rob Lowe dancing with Snow White.
Yeah, you said that in the 80s he did that. Yeah.
Yes.
And I missed that. So I would be very okay with that.
I wouldn't
some Billy Crystal. Where's that Billy Crystal?
I wouldn't say you've missed it. And I mean, that would
YouTube
be...
YouTube it.
Yeah, you could. But yeah, I think Billy Crystal's sort of the last resort.
He's like, very conservative, though. So with all the, you know...
Billy Crystal?
Yeah.
Like, politically?
I think so, yeah.
All right. we'll get into stuff about the show a bit later, but we're going to do what we did last year, mm-hmm. which was we're going to take the top four categories plus one dealer's choice wild card pick, category pick, and we're going to talk about who should win and who will win. So why don't we start with best director? Peter, who should win? Who do you think should win, and who do you think will win?
Ooh. Okay. Who should? I put who I want. But you know what? No, what I want is what should be the case. So what I really want, and what I think should get it, because it got snubbed, this director got snubbed the past couple of years, I want The Favorite to win. I want Yorgos Lanthimos,
yeah.
The Favorite to win. I love his work. I love his cinematography. I love the characters he picks, and I love just how surreal they are. And this one, very Victorian, you know, Academy seems to love that. So
technically pre-Victoria,
you know, and it was one of the only ones this year that was not a biopic. And that's one of the reasons as well that I really would be very okay with it winning. Him winning. Or it winning, sorry.
Although it is about like real people who lived at in a real place in a real time, but it's not a typical biopic as mm-hmm. as you would say. I think Spike Lee should win, and I think this is a situation where this is the first time he's been nominated for an Oscar, which seems like a huge
is
huge
it Spike
oversight.
Lee's first time?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. If I knew that, I might have. Although, don't worry, Spike Lee will get a mention later.
Oh, good. So I think
yeah, that's baloney.
It is baloney.
Malcolm X, man.
You know what? If Malcolm X was about George Washington and it's directed by a white director, it would have won 17 Oscars.
Yep.
But yeah, Spike Lee, actually, Malcolm X was supposed to be directed by Norman Jewison. And Norman Jewison said he thought it would have been in better hands with Spike Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Fun story. But yeah, so I think this is like a situation where someone should be rewarded, and as the Academy occasionally does for a body of work. But more than that, Black Klansman is a really great movie. It's really prescient. It's also like a deeply serious movie about racism, but it also has a lot of humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficult thread. And I think it's, given sort of Spike Lee's oeuvre, a tone.
He's one of the only people that can get that done.
He was only one who could get it done, but it was also kind of surprising that he had that capacity too, because he's not necessarily known for being funny.
No, and he hasn't really dived into biopics in a while either. So
yeah,
it would have been.
Go ahead.
I wouldn't have been surprised if he had like done some, you know, more kind of indie wild things like he did with, you know, Chirac. I was very impressed that he just made it a damn good film for everyone to enjoy, but also to get across the important points that he wants to make.
I think Alfonso Cuarón's going to win, though.
That's what I think, too.
I'd actually be okay with Yorgos Lanthimos winning, too.
I loved Black Klansman. It, too, is a biopic. I'm just saying. It's nice to see a director just do something fresh. I know there were some people that were disappointed with it in comparison to The Lobster, but I actually think in a strange way, even though the people that loved The Lobster, I know that saw it, didn't like this as much. I think this one could get
The favorite is more commercial.
Yeah, it's more. That's
the
why
favorite is Masterpiece get, Theater.
Yeah,
by Yorgos Lanthimos,
more of a wider audience.
Yeah,
but it's still got that indie surreal kind of flair that all his does
for sure.
Yeah.
Let's go to Best Actor.
Okay, Best Actor. Let's see.
Should we talk about the nominees?
Yeah, Best Actor.
Let's list the nominees. I have that here somewhere.
Okay, yeah, you list them.
So the nominees for Best Director were Cuarón, Lanthimos, Lee, Adam McKay for Vice, and Powell Polowski for Cold War.
Yeah, playing a bookshelf right now.
Good plug. Best Actor nominees are Christian Bale for Vice, Bradley Cooper for A Star Is Born, Willem Dafoe for At Eternity's Gate, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody, and Viggo Mortensen for Green Book.
Mm-hmm.
So you choose.
I think it'd be fantastic if Viggo Mortensen won. It's been quite a while since he did.
Is that because he's Viggo Mortensen?
No, I wouldn't say so. I'm not going to lie. Part of the reason that I would be totally okay with... I was about to say Aragorn. You know what? Aragorn. It'd be so amazing about him winning. That's something. And the only reason I put this, because he's not in Best Director, I'd be totally okay if Viggo Mortensen won it. Because it's the Farrelly film. And I love Peter Farrelly. And I think it's baloney he didn't get nommed for Best Director.
Hmm.
It's just because the Oscars always snub comedies, you know? Something About Mary, boom, hilarious. Shallow Hall, boom, hilarious. All his work... Dumb and Dumber, Dumb and Dumber, the amazing The Three Stooges starring Will Sasso. I've been in a film with him. But anyways, an extra, but still, it was cool. He's been to campus. The Grizzlies, check it out. So yeah, it's the most major one that fairly, I'm using the finger quotes because it's Viggo, but I just, fairly deserves it. And I love Viggo Mortensen and he deserves it. That's what I want.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who do you think will win?
I think the person who will win would be Christian Bale.
Really?
The Oscars, they've always loved him, and they love biopics. Mm. And like you said, you were just talking about how W won, like, everything, right?
W?
And you said one about an Oscar film about – didn't you say about George Bush or –
Which I didn't win any Oscars. Yeah, there's a film called W about George W. Bush. But
yeah, didn't
they
win a lot of Oscars?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about... Oh, okay. Maybe they don't like political ones that much, though.
Well, I mean, he still got the nomination, I think.
Well, and the last Steven Spielberg one about all the Russian issues, right? No, and Trumbo, right?
Oh,
I think there is. They do. Spies, they do love the political biopics. And in particular, Christian Bale did do a phenomenal job. And his portrayal has been getting the most amount of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's quite likely he'll win.
They've been pushing this commercial for Vice where it's like his speech at the end about how you may like hate him and hate the things he's done, but he did it to keep everyone safe. And then he says at the end where it's like, it's been my honor to be your servant.
Yeah.
Which the way Christian Bale kind of reads that in Dick Cheney's voice is just kind of utterly chilling.
Yeah.
But I think who should win, and I think who will win, is Rami Malek.
Rami Malek?
For Queen. Because I think without him, that movie is just a subpar Queen biopic. I think he elevates it. And I've heard a lot of people mock the fake teeth, and understandably so.
I loved it. I didn't even know about the fake teeth until you right now. So... and I'm not going to lie, if it wasn't a Farrelly bro that directed Green Book, I probably would have picked Raimi too.
Okay.
And the only reason I didn't pick him for Will, the Bryan Singer stuff. You know, I think even the Oscars might kind of just stick, it got the noms already, so they might stick away from it getting
But I
wins.
Think he kind of overcomes it because...
How great he was.
Because of how, because of how well he... Because he's so magnetic in the part. And the film... I really do think the film doesn't work without him.
No.
Because he's able to just embody so much of Freddie Mercury. And that's hard to do. Yeah, he's
such a magnet presence.
And the way things are recreated. One of the reasons I think Bohemian Rhapsody has made it this far is just, and I think Richard Krause made this point. I saw him in an interview and he's like, you know, you just leave the theater on this high of that extended recreation of Live Aid.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you leave the theater on such a high. Which is why I think if Bohemian Rhapsody wins anything, it will be this category because that
it's not going to get best.
Circumvents any of the singer ickiness.
Mm-hmm. Because Best Actor is just him as an individual. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's get into Best Actress.
Okay.
The nominees for Best Actress are Yalitza Aparicio, Roma, Glenn Close for The Wife, Olivia Colman for The Favorite, Lady Gaga for A Star Is Born, and Melissa McCarthy, Can You Ever Forgive Me? So who do you think will win and who do you think should win?
This might be surprising. I think Glenn Close might win. I know the film, like, nobody really watched it, right? But she's at the age and she's always been loved by, you know, BAFTA, Oscars, whatever. So I think they're going to give her, I don't want to call it a generous one because she was marvelous in it, but one that's kind of like, she deserves it, you know, maybe didn't get as much attention or was as good as the others, but we're going to give it to her. I think they're going to do that. And I'm okay with that because she is a phenomenal
actress. It's another one of those, like, she hasn't won an Oscar, so she needs.
Yeah.
She's had a career where she has probably earned it and things don't work out.
Mm-hmm.
I
would be okay with any of these people winning, though. I think they're
great. I think so,
Olivia Colman, I would have picked her, but she's already quite famous. So I think it'd be cool if Glenn Close got, you know, just she deserves another huge award.
Is Glenn Close your will win or should win? Or
both.
Both. Okay.
Yeah.
I think Aparicio should win. She's so great. I mean, so much of that movie is on her shoulders, and she was a novice actress going into that.
Yeah.
She's so warm and so it's so poignant. It's just such so great watching her. Great to see someone in an indigenous role played by an indigenous person. It's just seeing that talent on display, that raw talent.
Her breakdown is outstanding.
Yes.
It's like what you're saying with the Christian Bale. It's jaw dropping.
Like the scene where she saves the kids in the ocean. It's just you're on the edge of your seat. It's just so tearful, and you're so worried about her because the movie is kind of dumped on her almost entirely throughout the movie. And but you know it's all her. There's just such humanity. But I would be fine. I think Glenn Close will win because I think that's sort of the way the award season has been going. I think that she has momentum on her side. I am forced to take back my statement after A Star Is Born came out that Lady Gaga will win the
Oscar. Oh, yeah, you take
Oscar.
It back?
This is just such a strong field, and if the field wasn't as strong, if this was just, I can't think of a year where the Best Actress field wasn't that strong off the top of my head, but any one of these women should win, and I would be okay with Olivia
Melissa
Colman
McCarthy.
Winning. Melissa McCarthy was really good in that part.
Yes, she was.
It's, you know, it was not the Melissa McCarthy, like the comedic Melissa McCarthy.
No.
It was, I think, the character is, her name's Lee Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so much poignancy in that. This woman who's, you know, struggling to tell these truthful stories in her writing, and her claim to fame is making up complete bullplop. And that, I mean, there's almost something there that speaks to our current dilemmas and fake news and. There's some kind of metaphor there. I don't know. But it is a very strong category.
I'd say the strongest.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to Best Actor for a minute.
Well, William Dafoe and Bradley Cooper, I love them both. They've gotten enough stuff.
Well, I don't think Willem Dafoe has an Oscar.
No, but he's just we all know.
I want
Green Goblin. We all know.
I want Willem Dafoe to have an Oscar.
I don't know about Best Actor though. Maybe if it was Best Supporting Actor.
I mean, it seems to be the out of the left field one at Eternity's Gate, because I know people like at Eternity's Gate, it's not something that's really gotten a lot of wide attention. And Bradley Cooper, I feel like, has gotten shafted. And there's this really great...
Yeah, Best Director wasn't picked. I was kind of
Yeah, there was this
that.
Really great article in The Hollywood Reporter about how A Star Is Born sort of came out of Venice and Toronto as like the Oscar nominee to beat, and how it's kind of lost momentum and how that's particularly affected Bradley Cooper.
It still made bank, so he's fine in that
Well,
sense.
Bradley... don't misunderstand. Bradley Cooper is going to be fine.
Oh, yeah.
We're not worried about Bradley Cooper. He will be fine. but I mean, it is sort of sad that he's kind of fallen by the wayside, and because this was his passion project, this was his baby. So
yeah.
We're gonna take a quick musical break, and then we're gonna come back with the rest of our Oscar talk before we get into our Happy Death Day to You review. Stay tuned. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU.
Oh, I will take up the struggle. Oh, I know it's a fight. So I.
And that is just a bit from I'll Fight. It is by Jennifer Hudson, is the voice there. I think Diane Warren wrote the actual song, Perpetual Oscar Best Song nominee, Diane Warren. She of I Will Not Miss a Thing fame from Armageddon, for those of you who may remember that ditty from the Aerosmith. But it's from the RBG. Which is the documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which is nominated for Best Documentary. We are not going to talk about Best Documentary unless it's in one of our Dealer's Choice
categories. Yeah, that's true.
Categories. But we're going to move on to our Best Picture selections. And the nominees for that are Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Roma, Green Book, A Star Is Born, and Vice. So Peter, who do you think will win, and who do you think should win Best Picture?
I think, and I'm glad that you brought it up for Best Director, I want Black Klansman to win this. Black Klansman came out, it was one of the earliest seasons to come out, it is still getting so much buzz, and we already talked about it, but Spike Lee did such a phenomenal job. Laughter, important messages, and just great acting. Just, like, even if you don't like anything else, if you're an Adam Driver fan, is one of the best Adam Driver roles, right?
Oh, yeah, he's good.
If not the best. It's just great all around. And I think in comparison to all of these are relevant in some way, but I think Black Panther – not Black Panther. Sorry, I was looking at my Black Klansman.
Somewhere
I
Vince think, just snapped
yeah,
a pencil.
Black Klansman is the most relevant and most important. I think it's one that we all should watch.
Yeah,
because it's Spike Lee, but it doesn't just deal with race discrimination. It deals with anti-Semitism as well. It just deals with a lot of stuff that especially in the South, but everywhere. I'm not just pushing this on you, South, but a lot of this stuff's going on.
Yeah, and the scene
kind of rising a bit, which is what's scary.
Yeah, and the scene with Harry Belafonte talking about the I can't remember the young man's name who was lynched in 1916, but it was a real thing that happened.
Yep.
Is still haunting you know, I still think about that scene because it's just Harry Belafonte telling the story.
But I see, I didn't know the name of the individual or like the full details about it until the film.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I was the same, but it was a real thing that happened, and the way that it's shot and the way Harry Belafonte tells it's haunting. I think the favorite should win.
Oh yeah. Hey.
I think it's one of these movies, I think, of all these that sort of stayed with me that I constantly keep thinking about. It's so weird because it's a three-person play almost, but there's a thriller quality to it where everyone's just like so, like the three main women are just so vicious to each other and playing their games on each other, and there's like an edge of your seat quality. I was literally on the edge of my seat wondering who was going to screw who next and how. It is so masterfully acted, and the way it was shot was so
His shooting's always so
endlessly fascinating. The type of shots he was getting,
They're so all over the place and surreal that it's really hard to avoid them looking pretentious, but for him it doesn't. It just looks phenomenal.
And Emma Stone, I'm not going to talk about Best Supporting Actress, but I think the fact that she's like a real revelation in this.
And I love Olivia Colman.
Olivia Colman is great.
She was so good.
And Peep Show, too. Check out Peep Show.
So it's I think it's like as close to perfection as a film can get. Because I did have some minor gripes with Black Klansman.
Oh, of course.
But I really don't have any gripes about The Favourite.
Yeah.
Who do you think will win?
I think Roma will win.
Yeah, so do I.
I wasn't a huge fan. You could watch the episode, but I think it
listen
will
to
win.
The episode. We're not video.
Yeah, they
yet
they like Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah,
he won for Gravity.
Yeah,
so I think they're going to be totally fine giving him another one. This one's gotten so much buzz, and it is, even though I didn't like it, it is special, especially with what we were talking about, the indigenous actress. It's one of her first roles, and she was phenomenal. That's special. Alfonso Cuarón, it is a biopic like the others, but it's based around his personal life. That's special. It's black and white, special. There is some just great standalone cinematography scenes, like the one with the really jerky boyfriend, his like martial arts.
Yeah.
That scene was just beautiful.
Oh, it was, yeah.
So cinematography. So it's got beautiful things, great things in all aspects of a film. So I think, I think it will win.
Yeah.
And I won't, even though I didn't like it, I'll be okay with that.
You made peace with it.
Yeah, I know there'll be a lot of happy people, so.
Cool. That brings us to our dealer's choice picks. Which category did you choose?
I chose best original song.
Okay.
And I picked Shallow by Lady Gaga. All right. 1933, we got the first A Star Is Born, directed by William A. Wellman, starring Janet Gaynor, Academy Award nom, 1937. Second one, directed by George Cukor, starring, you might have heard of her, Judy Garland. 1954, Oscar noms. Frank Pearson directed, starring Barbara Streisand, another A Star Is Born, 1976, won an Oscar. And now we got A Star Is Born, 2018, Lady Gaga, directed by Bradley Cooper, and it better win Best Song. I think it's baloney that all of the first three, first two, did not get it for Best Song. It's just their songs. That's the whole film revolves around songs that I think they specifically focus on making a perfect song, and I think they accomplished that with Shallow. Mm-hmm. It's just so – I hear it on the radio constantly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I still love it.
And people sing along to it,
too. I don't even like country music, and I still love it. And it's the only song on this list that is the perfect representation for the film.
Right.
Shallow is the film.
I think Candace was on when the nominations came out, and we were talking about that, and it's like – it's the combination of Lady Gaga, who is very famous, very well liked, that it is the perfect song from the movie that sort of encapsulates the movie. Also, it's very easy to sing along to.
I see
that a lot when it comes on in the store and people are humming along to it or singing along to it.
And very beautiful singing from Bradley Cooper, too. Not in the sense that it's like great singing, but it is the singing and what he's saying and the way he's saying it is perfect representation for his character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm still a bit peeved that they nominated the wrong song for Mary Poppins.
Oh, which one did they nominate?
They nominated, I think, Where the Lost Things Go.
Where the Lost Things Go.
Can you imagine that is the best song in that movie?
No.
Yes, it is. I still, it's still in my head 2 months after seeing Mary Poppins.
What, the one that got nommed?
No, the one I'm
Oh, the one you want, that's why you're mad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I don't remember Where the Lost Things Go. I remember it's like the best song is the one that sticks. It's the one that gets into the mushy part of your brain.
Well, that's what they did for the other ones, like we were just saying, Shallow. Yeah.
Well, All the Stars, too, that's easy, that's memorable.
Oh, yeah, that one is, yeah.
So it's, anyway.
There were so many, that's the one from Black Panther, right?
Right.
I would have picked, there were so many better ones of Black Panther, too.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you should choose Best Picture because I chose Best Score.
Oh, Best Score.
And I think Nicholas Blanchard should win Best Score for If Beale Street Could Talk. Mm. Because there is such a dreamlike quality, because there's a free flowing narrative to it where it's like it goes forwards and backwards, and there are little asides and things, and the music really sells that flow. That the music sort of helps you keep in mind where you are in the story as it changes tones, as scenes change, as you see backwards and how the relationship began, as you see forwards, as the young man ends up going to prison accused of a rape he likely didn't commit, and how she's his best friend, his partner, is fighting to get him out of jail, fighting against all odds while she's pregnant. It's an incredibly poignant film, and I think the music, it's sort of there's a lot of narration in it, but the music is sort of another narrator too.
So kind of like Baby Driver, it's very much a part of the plot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it's not like A Star Is Born, where music is a part of the plot.
Yeah, there's just something,
the song just
comforting, there's something dreamlike to it. It's a very, very good score, and I think it helps make the movie, because there's a quality to If Beale Street Could Talk that Barry Jenkins is trying to get at, that this is not a singular story about these singular people, that this is a representative story of a lot of people in the black community. And I think there's a sort of universality to the music that sells that part of it a bit more, that you are watching a story where you can easily sub in different characters. You're just watching this very specific narrative, but this is a story that might have many different faces. So there, Nicholas Blanchard, I'm pulling for you.
Yeah, well, I hope for that too. I haven't seen that one, but it sounds
If Beale Street Could Talk, yes, it's Beale Street Could Talk is very, very good.
Yeah,
I don't know if I like it better than Moonlight, Recency Bias, and all.
No, oh, same director.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but it's Barry Jenkins' first since Moonlight, but it's so heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. So speaking of heartbreaking, the Oscars keep changing channel. I do want to, as we record this a couple of days before the show airs on Wednesdays, we do know that they have reinstated the four category presentations.
God, I was so angry. Best Cinematography is one of my favorites, and it's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're on again, so thank you.
So they were going to cut Best Cinematography, Best Editing, Best Live Action Short, and Best Hair and Makeup.
Yeah. Live Action Short, that would have been rude, too.
Yeah. I mean,
All of those.
I think my problem is, if you want to take out awards, fine. It just seemed completely random, especially when you're talking about cinematography and editing, which are like kind of key components to film, because you don't have a film unless you have someone shooting it or you have someone editing it. I think when it comes to the short film category, I think there's an argument to be made that if you wanted to take those out and maybe do it like at an earlier ceremony or like during commercial breaks. I realize that there's a lot of skill, having made short films myself and helped other people make short films. There's a skill and a talent needed to make short films, perhaps even more so than feature-length films. Mm. But I feel like in the modern era, there's really the purpose of short films are twofold. Either you are going to, you know, go for an Oscar. You're going for awards because that's kind of the only place that still sees them. There's really no way other way you could see those short films.
Yeah.
Or you're going to throw it up for free on Vimeo or YouTube.
Yeah.
Or you're using it as like a pitch for a bigger project, something like, you know, Lights Out or
yeah. But then the maker of it wouldn't get as much buzz.
Right. It feels like the time for short films has passed. I mean, not that, again, nothing against the talent.
Yeah, I enjoy short films.
I enjoy short films too.
Yeah,
there's no like Netflix for short films where someone's like has monetized that.
Yeah, it's true.
It just seems like part of a bygone era. And
Crave TV has some short ones, but
yeah,
other than that, yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, it's what's the end goal with making a short film now if you're not, you know, doing it as like sort of a
to get an Oscar,
a prestige. Yeah, it's a prestige project to get an Oscar, or
it should stay.
All right, I'm just floating that argument. They're also going to do perform all the songs. A couple of weeks ago, they were talking about cutting all but two of the song performances, but they're going to push on with doing all five songs.
Ugh, I would have been okay with them cutting out the songs. There's so many songs.
I've
seen the film, so I've already heard the songs.
Well, I would have been fine with a medley.
Oh, yeah. Medleys are cool. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
Or if it was something like Lady Gaga did like a few years ago. I forget what it was for, but like really over the top. Like,
oh, yeah.
Almost more a play.
That was the song for The Hunting Ground, the documentary about sexual assault. Yeah, I mean, and there was a message to that. And of course, I mean, Lady Gaga puts on a show. That's what Lady Gaga does.
I just know Bradley Cooper will not be attending.
Which,
so I don't know who's going to be.
Makes me sad that he would. That he's ducking or he's busy or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what the reason
Bradley
is.
Cooper world. Rocket Raccoon reshoots. No, he doesn't. He just does the voice. but it's I think the Oscars, what they're trying to do is get it to cap it at 3 hours. And that's fine. That's a laudable goal. But what would we complain about when it comes to the Oscars if it was under 3 hours long or at 3 hours long? Because I feel like it running like 4.5 hours is kind of like part of the Oscar tradition.
Oh yeah, being really really long. Yeah,
like you get still to sitting there at 1 o'clock in the morning waiting for Best
Picture. Or just have a really awesome chill night with yourself and just yeah, it's supposed to be that long. It'd be like if they cut Lord of the Rings like down to like an hour and a half, that just wouldn't work. It wouldn't feel right. It's right. Also it being longer also makes it feel like it should. It's a big thing,
right?
You know.
I feel like that if they want to get it shorter, I think there's some very obvious things to do. Like, first of all, cut all the things like the montages about how film is awesome.
Yeah.
Because there's at least two or three of those in the Oscars. Like, well, you all love film. Here's some clips to prove it. And, you know, bits. I mean, that it won't be a problem this year because there's no host. But, like, that whole thing last year where Jimmy Kimmel's like, let's go across the street to a movie theater with regular folks.
I thought that was amazing.
Well, I mean, it's...
I don't know. I thought it was special. I thought it made... in the past few years, the Oscars has been very boring. And that made it feel a bit more alive than it has.
All right, but I'm just saying
It took away so much time.
Also, like, I heard this on the Love It or Leave It podcast, and they said, somebody said, you know, they should just, when you come back from commercial break, have the person at the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And you could easily cut out like 20 minutes of people walking outstage onto the microphone. So those are some free ideas that the Academy can take from us.
Do we know who... Any hosts? Have any hosts been
announced? No, there's no hosts.
See? Do we know which individuals might appear?
I have not heard, but that's not to say it hasn't been announced.
Okay.
But, I mean...
I hope there's some surprises.
Well, I think what's very clear is that they're playing it very close to the chest, that they're trying very hard to try and pull some together. But they're also... It's kind of clear they're making it up as they go because they keep throwing these things at the wall to see if they'll stick, and absolutely nothing is sticking. So they have to keep going back to the drawing board. And I guess what they're trying to do is they can't put on a show because there's not a host, so they have to get in under 3 hours. But everyone's saying is like, no, we don't like any of these ideas you have to to pound this into a 3-hour thing. So I have no idea what this is going to look like.
No, that's well, and that's what I was saying earlier. That's kind of the excitement about it, right? It's probably not going to lead to good, you know, good results, but I don't know. I think it's getting the Oscars more attention than it has. And
you could
recently.
Be right.
Yeah.
You could be right. It could be that a lot of people will tune in to, you know,
just to see how crappy it
is. Yeah, the car crash logic to see the car crash. Yeah, you could be right. Anyway, the Oscars are on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Check your local listings, as they say. It's pretty easy to find. And maybe we'll talk about the results next week. We're going to take a break here and get queued up for our review of Happy Death Day to You, which will surely be a nominee next year for Best Picture. Well, it would if I had anything to say about it. But we'll get into that in a minute. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You ditched our house meeting?
It was canceled.
When?
After I kicked my murdering roommate out of a window.
Exactly. Who's gonna pledge Kappa now that we have a death curse? We're in crisis mode, Tree. Ew. Who are these people? Call me as soon as you're done with your creepy little Comic-Con meeting.
Indeed. Who's gonna pledge Kappa with a death curse? The important question of our time. And that was a clip from Happy Death Day to You. It is a new film from Christopher Landon, and it stars Jessica Roth, Israel Broussard, Fee Vu, Rachel Matthews, Ruby Modine, Suray Sharma, and Sarah Yarkin. And it is the sequel to Happy Death Day, which came out in 2017. Mm-hmm. Another Blumhouse joint, if you
budget
know.
Of $4 million, made like over $100 million.
Yes. I mean, this is the secret to the Blumhouse success is that they'll write $5 million checks to horror filmmakers. Go make your film. They'll market it, and then from that we've gotten The Purge, we've gotten Happy Death Day, we've gotten Get Out, we've gotten the Halloween
and
reboot.
The upcoming Us.
Us from Jordan Peele. Yep, which looks nuts. But in an awesome way.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. And Ma, did you see the trailer for Ma?
No, I didn't see it.
Really?
Yeah.
With Octavia Spencer?
No.
Luring kids to a creepy cabin in the woods to party?
No, geez.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
But that's getting us away from Happy Death Day to You. You saw the first one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of the first one?
Oh, I thought it was okay. It wasn't really my kind of film, but I can see why a lot of people really enjoyed the first one.
Mm-hmm.
My issue with them is they're just PG. It said PG 14, but you go into the Galaxy Cinemas and it just said PG, and that's, I don't know, it was very clear for both of them, especially this one. Well, we're going to get more into this one, but I just don't know what it's supposed to be. Is it supposed to be making me laugh more? Is it supposed to be making me scared? Is it supposed to be making me, like, am I supposed to find the main character, whether it's, like, the guy or the girl hot, like most horror films try to do? Like, what does this film want? What is this film trying to do? And I still don't fully get it.
I get that. I think what I liked about the first Happy Death Day is that it is sort of very character-centric. And, you know, character is sometimes secondary in a horror movie in terms of the tone or in terms of the threat or whatever you're trying to go for. But it really does flow from the character, I think, in the case of Happy Death Day. So you have this character Tree, played by Jessica Roth, who I think is really good.
Oh, she's phenomenal. Yeah,
she's such a game day player. She's up for anything.
She's 32, and she actually she just looks like 18
she,
or whatever.
She looks like she just entered university. Yeah. So it just, you know, from you see her evolve from someone who's very selfish, very petty, someone who's, you know, dealing with a lot of issues. Her mom died. And, you know, to see her evolve and to see her become someone who is more understanding and more more willing to – there's a scene in the first movie, spoiler alert, where the boy whose bed she wakes up in every day, the same day, who she didn't know before, where he saves her life and she manages to get the – get one up on the person who's killing her every day. And she sacrifices herself so she can start the day over again so he won't die. And that's a character arc that is very well drawn.
Yeah,
and
it's something
and
not
very
expecting
easy to, yeah.
From that kind of film.
So I think from it, from a character standpoint, Happy Death Day is great. And I don't mind that it's not like a hard R horror movie. I
wasn't a fan of that.
It opens up to a lot of, I think, interesting, you know, ways to sort of get around that. One of my favorite kills from the first movie is when she manages to get out of the hospital and she's stopped by the police officer, but the baby face killer, I don't know if that's what we're calling it, but it's a killer in a baby face mask. So.
That bugged me. I want
you don't
a
like
name.
The baby face mask?
No. I want like a specific singular name for the killer.
Like ghost. Because it's like ghost face.
Is that what they call him?
Well, the
Scream
movie.
No, see, that's names like fans are giving it, right?
Right.
In the film, I want there to be a specific name.
You want
or
a Jason
in the title,
Voorhees?
I want a Jason. I want a Freddy. Right. I want a Michael Myers. yeah, I want all of that.
Baby face killer isn't good enough. For Peter, fair enough.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
one of my
that and it's a slasher. There should have been I don't know. I'm saying, you know, guy or girl. There should have been more nudity, man. It should have been like Hostel or something like that. Like there's supposed to be. I don't know, but it's 14, so it makes it so 14-year-olds can go with other parents. And that's pretty cool.
It doesn't, but I mean, not everything, you don't need an R rating for everything, but what I was getting at was one of my favorite kills on the first one is when the babyface killer sideswipes the car, causes the gasoline to leak out, and all you see is the hand coming out of the car window with the birthday candle.
Yeah.
To light. I enjoyed that a lot. That's my favorite kill from the first one. This, I mean, the tonal problem with this one is that it's expanding the universe of the film.
Less time for the characters' relationships with each other.
And less time for slasher stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, the majority of the really gross ones were in that quick montage, you know? Also, I do want to say, like, horrors can be great when they're just, you know, PG or PG-14.
Yeah.
But I think to be phenomenal, if just at that level, you need to focus more on the shots. And I thought the kind of just cinematography in this was a little meh. It was pretty basic blockbuster, you know, just a bunch of kind of quick shots. In particular, there was the one where the baby face killer, that's what we'll call it. I don't mind that. The baby face killer, we see Tree. Camera's facing her, so like we're looking at her and we see the babyface killer behind her and then a quick shot to him, you know, going after her. I would have preferred if that was like, do you remember The Strangers? And there's that thrilling scene where you see the kitchen and it's like a minute long still shot of those killers slowly walking in, and there's just something about that makes it feel more real, like you're there. And with that quick cut, I felt like I was watching these people in a college. I didn't feel like I was there dealing with the issue that these college kids were.
I'm not sure. What am I getting at? Christopher Landon, who directed the film, wrote the script for this one, and I don't think he wrote the script for the first one. So I think there may have been some. There may have been a way to sort of balance everything they wanted to do with it a bit better. What I did appreciate was, I think, the core idea of it, which is that it manages to subvert sequel expectations and lean into them.
That's true.
Because
oh, yeah.
The script still follows kind of the same beats with there's a task that has to be done in order to accomplished a task, a tree must die again and again.
Yeah.
And you see that montage. We get to a point where it's like clearly having a physical effect on her. We get to learning more about who the killer is this time.
Yeah, yeah.
We get a twist, and we get a resolution where we kind of go back to normal.
And Fivu got more screen time, and I enjoy him.
Yes.
I like his style. I mean, I like his style. I like that blonde dyed hair. I might dye my hair blonde just because of him. I might. I don't know.
Yeah,
I thought he was fun. And I thought that I enjoyed how the first few scenes were like singularly like him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he deserved it.
No, it's I like that Deke, though. I like that how it's like, okay, now this guy Ryan, we're going to follow him all day, you know, as he's going over and over. But yeah, it kind of pivots to.
Yeah, instead of it just being Tree. Yeah, they delved a bit to him in the beginning.
Yeah.
But I would have preferred there to be a bit more, what was his name, Samar? Skamar?
Yeah, Samar, who was the Choral guy.
Yeah, Samar and Drake. That would have been really cool.
Yeah.
Did they have a relationship? You know, like, were they gay? Like, did they what were they getting their degrees in? Like, there's just so much, so many more things I wanted to know.
What's
about
the deal
them.
With this dean?
Yeah. Oh, the dean. That dean.
Crusty, bitter old dean.
Yeah, yeah. I love that dean. That was the thing that I enjoyed about it.
But
that gave me the kind of vibes that like slashers do, like Scream or something. Like that was just straight up like some silly comedy.
That, but you were talking about 80s. You know, cinematography, and that's kind of where the film very much leans into that, with this crusty, bitter old dean who's trying to, you know, stop them from doing their weird science. And then there's the whole sequence where they have the sorority sister, Danielle, pretending to be blind so that they can steal
his
keys.
Yeah, that was silly. That was some really good slapstick. I enjoyed it. It was silly. And I like he used the word capiche. He said capiche a lot, and I just enjoyed that. I
don't know why the way he said it. You don't hear capiche a lot anymore. Yeah.
And he briefly mentioned the name of someone, and the person's last name was Dildo or something. It was like a really lame...
Oh, he called him Boner.
Boner, but yeah.
But you hear Ryan specifically, I think he pronounces it Bonner.
Oh, okay. So there was some funny things there. And in a slasher, you know, getting some humor in there is fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I thought they succeeded with the dean. And I thought the dean guy did a good job.
We should highlight him.
I got notes on him.
Yeah, the dean. But
Steve Zissis is the name of the actor.
Yes, you're right, Steve Zissis.
Dean Roger Bronson.
It seems kind of like he's done a lot of work as Paul Giamatti's stand-in. But he's got a quite prolific IMDb profile here.
Yeah.
So, it was. I enjoyed that a lot. I enjoyed the ridiculousness of it. I enjoyed how like none of the science sounds like even quack science. Like, we're just gonna like throw a bunch of like multisyllabic words at this to explain what is going on, and you're just either gonna go with it or you're not gonna go with it. We're gonna assume particle physicists are not sitting in the audience of Happy Death Day to You. There might be a few, but I'm not sure they really cared about, you know, getting the techno babble right, which I enjoyed.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Overall it was we forgot to mention, okay, I'll tell you this. The quick shots and certain of the deaths were pretty cool.
Oh,
the one with her jumping off the plane was pretty funny. funny and gross. So it had a good, it had a proper slasher reaction. I got a proper slasher reaction from that.
Yeah,
and the wood chipper one was cool.
The wood chipper.
Yeah, that one was cool. That one was like even PG. That was gross.
Yeah. I wish I hadn't rewatched Deadpool 2 recently because there's a wood chipper gag in that, but. Got to keep them fresh, right?
Yeah. One thing I want to say, I found the music in this was pretty mediocre. The Paramore song we played, I don't love Paramore, but I thought that song was great, and I thought that
it worked,
matched the vibe. And Paramore is played all the time in colleges too.
And I also like the cover of "Stayin' Alive" that they played over the end credits.
Oh, I don't. Oh, the end. Yeah. I missed the end credits. So.
Hey, that's the name of the show.
Where's the
narrative?
You're right.
That's
the
name of the show. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of fun with this. I like too how
the one ringtone being beautiful was fun too. like that.
But there's, it's, I don't know how much of this was planned, because I think I've read something where there's a quote unquote trilogy planned, and normally I hate that kind of talk, but there does seem to be some sort of plan afoot, because
that plane jumping, he had planned that from the very first one.
Yeah.
He just wanted her to be in a bikini and jump off a plane hardcore. And he finally accomplished it.
He finally did it.
But it was real skydiving, apparently.
Well, hopefully with a real parachute. But
oh yeah, it was a real stunt. So there was
right.
Not, yeah, she wasn't. Yeah, it's probably a foam pit she found.
But the thing with the blackout, or the brownout in part one, where you constantly see the lights go out,
mm-hmm.
that plays into this. Why do the lights go out? And there was something else, because I rewatched Happy Death Day recently, but there was something else that there was in the first film that is paid off in the second film. But I also will note that there was stuff kind of blatantly established, I think, in this film that is meant to pay off in a third film.
Oh, 100%. Well, and just the little teaser at the end of the credits.
There's a stinger.
It's dependent on how much money it makes. That's just the way it is, right?
Well, that's how it always is.
I think it'll be fine.
I mean,
all my friends that like horrors have already seen it. Like, they like it. I think it'll make enough money. I think it'll make 100 mil like the previous.
Mm-hmm.
And the budget for this one was just 9 million. So.
Yeah, which is like Ishtar for Blumhouse.
Yeah.
So I think it has made its money back, at least. I will say that, they did, to my satisfaction, up the ante enough. Like, there's a really elaborate car crash sequence that is over the top, and a lot of these are physical stunts too.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, they are. Like I said, that was a real jump off the plane, not into a foam pit.
Yeah,
but still, it was high up. Foam pit was far down.
And the whole thing with the machine, the loop machine. Let's call it the loop machine that we discover is the reason why Tree was able to die and come back the same day in the first film. When that kind of blows up near the beginning, those effects were really, really good. So,
oh, they were, yeah. Especially with
the money's on
like
screen.
That.
The money's on screen.
All of it, yeah.
Yeah. Every single last dollar. I like the cast a lot. I feel like I can't say enough about Jessica Roth, because she has to do the silly stuff. She has to do the horror stuff. But there's a scene.
There wasn't enough emotional stuff in this one for me.
When she's reunited with someone in the alternate dimension.
Yeah, that was so, for me, that was a little cringy.
I didn't think it was cringy at all. I thought that she sold it really well.
All right.
I think it was, I had saw that coming about who was going to be alive in the alternative dimension. Once we realized she's in an alternative dimension and things have changed.
Yeah.
I realized that when she went to her birthday lunch, who else was going to be there? I saw it coming, but I thought it was still very effective, and I think it's because she sold it so well.
She did. I didn't think the mom sold it very well. I think
the mom's
whole presence felt.
Well,
more
we just
like,
spoiled the thing, but that's fine.
Oh, you're right. I did.
I was bending over backwards not to spoil it. But.
No, she felt the same way that the parents do in Philosopher of the Stone when he's looking in the mirror.
Oh, right.
There, but not fully the real one. You know? Also, yeah, I messed up. I revealed it. I'm sorry, listeners.
Oh, spoiler alert for the Philosopher's Stone, too. All right. You want to go back and ruin Citizen Kane? It's a sled. It's a sled.
It is a sled. Toboggan. It's Canada. It's a toboggan.
Well, is a sled a toboggan? Aren't they two different? I think a sled is different from a toboggan.
I don't know.
I don't think a toboggan has rails is what I'm saying.
Okay. I guess you understand Canada more than me.
Because then we're going to call it crazy carpet a toboggan? I don't think so.
I love crazy carpet.
They're two different things.
Yeah.
Two different things. And that's the end of end credits.
Forever.
You can find this and past episodes of the show on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can also find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. And if I can get our end music going... There we go. Peter, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me as Mr. Taurak on YouTube and Twitter.
Cool. And I can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca. That's my politics website. I will be on CFRU again tomorrow at 5 p.m.?
Yes.
I've only been doing it for 5 years. 5 p.m. on Thursday. That's with Scotty Hertz, Open Sources, Guelph News and Politics. So check us out. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits. And we will see you then.